That's me on the podcast, sharing a song with something to say about it. With Thin Lear and Niagara Moon, losing my opinion.
Hey, Thin Lear, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
I made myself a big old lasagna on this Monday afternoon.
Yeah, you're actually dressed like Garfield.
He's my favorite character. It's the best franchise of all time. Jim Davis is an uncompromising genius.
I have Jim Davis's autograph.
Really?
I'll have you know. Yeah, my mom used to run this like reading program for kids. And one of the perks was we sometimes got swag. So I got that was the perk. I got a signed Garfield's picture when I was like 8.
I don't know if maybe like the earliest stuff was cool, but as somebody who's a big fan of comic strips, like Garfield always,
it was good.
The McDonald's of comics. I don't know.
When I liked it, I loved it. I can't say.
And then I turned 7.
Yeah. I'm still into it now. I mean, yeah, we were talking about Doonesbury before too.
Oh, fuck that. I know that was over my head. That's got the opposite problem.
Still over my head. Yeah, I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, that's like Zippy the Pinhead territory.
I don't even know what that is.
We're not here to talk comic strips.
Talking comics.
Not the podcast for that. I did want to share a quote, a really lovely tweet I saw from a listener, Mitch, recently. Okay. Just a little excerpt of it here. He was talking about us. He says, "They know far more classic rock than I know, but they don't make me feel dumb for not knowing it."
Oh, that's really nice. I don't think we could make anyone feel dumb with the amount
of
research
we
do for
them. We know so much that it's making us dumb. Like, I feel like I should have more useful, you know, relevant to life information instead of what James Taylor's fifth
album
was or
whatever. Where my keys are. Yeah. Yeah, I worry sometimes on this show that we go too negative. I think I try to bring in amusing things, maybe sometimes novelty things, and I feel like sometimes we just talk too much. I worry about that. You
Isn't
know?
That what gets the clicks?
It is what gets the clicks, but that's why I feel like I do it too much and I don't talk about enough positive things.
Well, I look forward to this new direction you seem to have taken on. What podcast? What are we listening to? I'm fulfilling both roles today.
Great work.
The music critique? Certainly opinionated podcast, Losing My Opinion. I am ever scrambling. Indie artist Niagara Moon, aka Thomas Irwin.
I am Sunny Side Up. Indie artist Thin Lear, aka Matt Longo. I was listening. I don't typically listen to our show. I hate to reveal that.
Hey,
to
that's
you.
The healthy choice. Yeah.
I mean, like so self-involved. It's already a huge level of self-involvement to just do a podcast, let alone then listen back to it.
And I
was listening back to the Roger Waters episode, really enjoyed it, but it's it was like I was just very, very negative. I don't want to be a crabby fellow, so I want to try to kind of shift things around today. I want to do a heavy hitter episode because change of pace. I want to talk about music I love. I've been like plunging the depths and bottom feeding for a while on the show and leaning on amusing, and I don't want to.
You
do
already
that.
Talked about the End of Days soundtrack, though.
But it was so fun. That's like the pull of the novelty. It's too great for me sometimes. I have to talk about the End of Days soundtrack. That I needed to talk about. That one.
Right.
That had to
happen. I just mean if that's your favorite music, like where do we go from here? You know?
Well, wouldn't call it my favorite. My favorite music. I'm going to put my big boy pants on today and present something enjoyable and hope maybe no one will like it. But hey, I will enjoy listening back. I'm going to talk about someone today. This has been a long time coming.
Okay.
I actually had to be like, did we do this episode already? I don't think we have. If we did, we have to stop and I need to come up with something else. But I'm going to talk about someone today that we cannot actually do justice in one episode. It's a man of many hats. We talk a lot about chameleon-like artists on the show, and I'm not sure that anybody deserves this title more than our subject today. This is a very selfish episode. I'm not looking to provide a way into their catalog. This is just like my favorite songs of theirs.
That's my MO every week, man.
Is it?
Almost every week, yeah.
That sucks. I thought you were having some sort of...
You're doing one for you today is what it sounds like.
This is one for them. This is one for me.
Uh-huh.
And one for you, I guess, was the Roger Waters episode. So this fellow, L.A. born, he played banjo with Bill Monroe and Doc Watson, two legends early on in his career, went on to be one of the greatest, hands-down, session musicians of all time. Okay. Sideman with Captain Beefheart, Taj Mahal, Neil Young, The Stones, Judy Collins, Van Morrison, and this is where you'll get it, our perennial favorite, Randy Newman. He's lent his talents to all-timer soundtracks like Paris, Texas, a theme that I think is just always in my head. It's just like at any moment, I could have the Paris, Texas theme in my head. He introduced the world to the genius of Cuban Son. My wife will probably tell me I've said that wrong. I'm sure I have. Masters in Buena Vista Social Club. That's like one of my favorite records. It's just like I can't. Lightning in a Bottle. The most fun I have heard like on record. Collaborated with Malian multi-instrumentalist Ali Farka. And he also just leisurely dropped excellent album after excellent album of his own songs and 100% refused to settle on a style. Just like breezily went with the muse wherever the hell it took him. And I always love it. Like it's even when I'm not in love with the record. Like I get what he's doing. I appreciate it. We're talking about Ry Cooder today. This has been a long time
awesome.
Coming. What are your initial feelings about this person?
I've definitely heard his work as a guitarist in the music of so many artists and albums that I love. I know he's a behind the scenes, like, you know, in demand guy, particularly, you know, in the 70s, but his career really ran. Is he still active today even?
Yeah, he's still doing his thing. His last record came out in like 2018, but he's always something cooking.
Yeah, just decades and decades. I know him as kind of a like can do it all sort of guy. Yet I don't know Buena Vista Social Club. I know that album cover.
Holy shit.
Great cover.
Well, we have to do that one day.
I'm looking forward to hearing some of that. Yeah, no particular reason that I've never sat down and listened to one of his albums, like either Social Club or one with like his own name on it. I don't know why. I couldn't tell you, but I'm expecting good things. I've been looking forward to this one.
This just goes all over the place. He's the kind of artist that made me want to do this podcast to begin with before I became cynical and started sharing children's playlists and whatever else I talk about, Kiss and all that. I think he's just one of the most talented people who's ever recorded, like pure talent. And he absolutely has his following, you know, but I don't think he's a household name by any means. I mean, you know him.
Nor would he want to be, probably.
I don't think he would, no. Yeah. But he should be. Nate was talking about like music scratching an itch a few weeks back, and I thought that was a great expression for what this is. This is what Ry Cooder, I think, does for my brain. He makes me passionate about guitar music. And I am a guitar player, but I do not love the guitar. It's my vehicle for writing, but like he makes me love guitar. I think if I played like him, I would love guitar. I have too many songs to share today.
Hey, we got all the time in the world.
I want to start with, okay, I really have no idea where I'm going with this because it's just too much love, you know, when you have too much love for something.
So you love, your enthusiasm for guitar music explodes when you listen to this guy. Is that the main appeal of him for you is just what he can play, how he sounds, or like where are your first go-tos when you know, think about him?
I think of traditional music, traditional styles put through a blender and revitalized and made vibrant again.
So country, blues, Americana, is that what
all
we're
of it.
Just all of
yeah,
it?
Yeah, just like put through a ringer of this person's perspective and it comes out the other side. And it's not that it's like untraditional or non-traditional. It's not like he's respectful of the styles, but he does something different with it. Sometimes you can't even put your finger on what the different thing is. It's just his take. There's this combination of things where you're just like, what the fuck? And it just hits you the right way. Let's start with the song then, I think, based on your question. So the first tune we're going to listen to is a traditional song. He didn't write this one. This is Jesus on the Main Line is the song. And it's such a loving blend of American music. And he also does whatever the fuck he wants with it. Like, I think you hear his love for it even as he combines and separates and prunes. I'm hearing all the traditional music put through the blender of this dude's brain, and it emerges to me like I haven't heard it before. You know, if you think about the band or whatever, right? Like what they did for old-timey music, you listen to them and you're not like, you know, there's a difference between the kind of music that we listened to last week with Greg. I could talk about that, right?
Listeners have no context for what you're talking about.
That won't have come out?
Wait, I don't know. Maybe it has.
Yeah, this is coming after that
episode.
Oh, yeah,
what am I saying? We're 1 week ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, unless you just start changing the order of episodes for no reason. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, there's some Americana that just approximates, right? And it's like, here's this, but I have a neck tattoo. You know, this is not that. I mean, he's not really approximating. He adopts and blends and it becomes something else.
Kind of allows for the next evolution of it, even.
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe it just sits with Rykooter. And that was a branch off the tree of some traditional style. And he has it.
All right. Well, you shared with me here Jesus on the Main Line from the album Paradise and Lunch. I love this cover.
Great cover.
Great colors here. His scarf there.
Put it
1974.
On at 33 seconds. And you'll hear he just kind of hops from perspective to perspective. And it's not, it's challenging and a little bit, but it's also just like it rolls over you.
All right.
This like mesh of stuff.
Yeah, this feels like it had Van Dyke's Parks fingers on it. Is he involved in this?
And I.
Oh, hello. Ooh, that's funky.
I mean, if someone doesn't like this, it's just like, I'm not sure I trust them, you know?
My wife wouldn't like this. She doesn't like any of this stuff.
But there's such a heavy thump to it, you know?
It's kind of psyched out. It's got a weird phasey thing going on. Yeah, no, this is right up my alley.
Oh,
you knew I was going to say this. It's got a Haruomi Hosono vibe to it. Big time. I think they're.
I don't disagree with you.
In the 70s, I think those two guys were doing very similar things.
I don't disagree with you. I think that's, you know, what's the word? Like polyglot? You know, like what's the word for someone that just is a magnet for all different stuff and then it comes out just the way they do it?
Totally.
I don't even know what to play you next. I'm just excited to listen to this music.
I think I'm going to like anything you throw my way. I'm very glad you're doing this today.
Let's start with this song I don't think is particularly challenging. But I think you kind of get to see where he started off solo career-wise. This is Boomer's Story. It's off one of his first solo records. Might be, pretty early on. It's another traditional tune he's playing here. And I was trying to find some motif between songs I love from him. So I picked a bunch of songs where he's taking an old song and injecting new life into it. And I think, you know, this has like commonalities with the band and Taj Mahal and some of those other acts that he was playing with at the time. And I think it shows you like where he started off creatively. And I want you to hear it. I really love this song. It's not my favorite one that we're playing today, but I want you to hear it to kind of see what the foundation is for this guy so we can kind of move forward.
This is from 1972. Yeah, this is definitely early.
Yeah, it's maybe the third record or...
Yeah, something like that. I would say I have no idea what to expect, but I don't know. I kind of do at the same time. I just know you it's going to be really good.
You still know what to expect right now. I think when we, as we keep moving forward, it's going to be disorienting.
It's going to get weirder.
Yeah. There's one that we're going to end with that is just fucking great. And you just do not see it coming.
It lists the, like all the credits. I'm seeing a lot of names alike. I'm seeing Jim Keltner. I'm seeing Lenny Waronker. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just fucking... I mean, Randy Newman plays... When Randy Newman's playing backing piano on your record, it's a good sign. Yes, this is his third record. It's the title track, really, off the third record.
Cool.
Come and gather on. Me, listen to my tale of woe.
Thin Lear.
Got some good advice.
This is Chunky.
This is okay, yeah. This is Chunky.
He makes chunky music.
Take a tip from one who's traveled and never stopped a rambling round. Cause once you get the Roman fever, you never wanna settle down, boy.
Yeah, this is very much like the band.
Yes, yeah.
Met a little gal in Frisco. I asked her to be my wife. Told her I was tired of roaming. Gonna settle down for life. Then I heard the whistle blowing. And I knew it was a red ball train. And I let that gal beside the main road. And never saw that gal again.
I can just see you in your basement home studio spending 2 hours like trying to dial in this guitar tone.
I mean, this guy's tone is just like fucking mind-boggling. Just one of the best slide guitarists ever, you know? I mean, he's there with George Harrison in terms of like finding the right notes, and his tone is like unbeatable. I want you to see him shred. That's why I'm sharing this next one. It's a live cover of a Woody Guthrie song called Do Re Mi, and he is just choosing to shred the shit out of this song with the Chicken Skin Band and leaning into just the rich textures of this Mexican backing group. And again, taking a traditional song, I think we can call it Woody Guthrie song, right? Somewhat traditional, and pushing it in a direction that I don't know, somebody else would think to do this. And you'll get to see that he is like, you know, he's just a straight up virtuoso on his instrument. The Stones actually were looking to recruit him for the band, you know, when Brian Jones passed away, and he really had an influence on their sound. I mean, they went with Mick Taylor, but you know, he plays on...
Mick Taylor was probably influenced by
I hear some of Cooter's playing and what Mick Taylor does, especially on like the scuzzier songs. There's a song you should check out. We don't have time to listen to it today, but from the Stones called Memo from Turner.
That's from I know that one. That's on the Goodfellas soundtrack.
Is it? Right? It's also, yeah. It's on the, it's from a soundtrack from a movie called Performance that Mick Jagger was in. And he kind of, you know, got to not use the typical Stones backing group for that. And he plays this sly guitar on that song that is, it's one of the best guitar tones the Stones have ever had. Mm. And, you know, I think he had way more of an influence on the Stones that Keith Richards would like to admit during that time period in the late 60s and the direction they headed in.
Hey, man, if it wasn't for Mick Taylor joining that group, I mean, they did have some good stuff in the Brian Jones era too.
Mick Taylor took it to a different level.
Yeah, you take out Mick Taylor, you don't get the main reason I care about that band.
Right, that period where...
That was a golden era for them, yeah. So, all right, so we're doing... So in Ry Cooder, I always... Because Buena Vista Social Club, we're about to listen. He's got this band, the Chicken Skin Band, and they're all... Mexican musicians. I always thought he had like Hispanic heritage. I'm just looking it up now. Nope. He just grew up in Los Angeles.
He's an LA guy.
Yeah.
he lost his eye early in life. He has one glass eye. Which is
he accidentally stuck a knife in his left eye at the age of 4. Oh, I wish I never read that.
Yeah, but yeah, he was just a Los Angeles fellow, and he collaborated a lot with this label called like World Circuit Records, I think, and he was obviously interested in getting in touch with all kinds of music from everywhere, and not necessarily always putting his own spin on it. I wouldn't even put it like that because it sounds like, you know, he was approaching it with arrogance. I think he was always approaching the music with love. It's not even like a Paul Simon thing where he's like, I'm going to take my songs and put them in this style. It's something else going on because he's always collaborating. And with Buena Vista Social Club, he was just sitting in and really capturing what was there.
His voice and presentation as a lead singer is great for the vibe of the music he's doing. He's not like drawing you in with his individual personality, I think it would be fair to say. You know, he didn't want to. He's not a Paul Simon, Bob Dylan, like, you know, he's not developing worldview that people right. track, or, you know, he's mm-hmm. not in front of all the cameras all the time. So I get the sense he doesn't like impose his personality and his vibe onto other music the way that other artists do, even when it's great. Like, I love Graceland, and I love what Paul Simon does in that record.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
It's not that. It seems like he goes over to new style music, learns the shit out of it, and then just channels it, like channels his love of this and his love of that. And then the cool thing is the different styles mix, but he's a channeler. He's not a presenter, if that.
Yeah. He doesn't put his face on other people's stuff. I mean, I think in his solo music, that's where he blends. But I think when he is collaborating with another artist, I mean, he's very deferential, you know, if that's the word. You know, with Buena Vista Social Club, it's not like you hear him ripping finger picking solos all over the tracks. You know, he's there, and it sounds like he's just part of that patchwork of musicians.
I've never heard that music, and I totally agree.
I think you would love that record. That record. It's just, I mean, there are moments on that record that I'll never forget having heard. It just, there are moments that sound like the most joy that anyone has had playing music. I mean, that's the best way I can describe that album.
Hopefully we get there soon. For right now, though, we're going to go to this live recording with the Chicken Skin Band, 1977. The song is Do Re Mi.
Yeah, go to 320, started at that point, and you get to see. I just want you to hear him rip this this solo and over the top of this music that is that blender that we were talking about before. California's the garden of Eden, it's a paradise to live in or see. But believe it or not, you won't find it so hot if you ain't got the do-re-mi.
When you do a solo that also sounds like rhythm guitar, that's the best shit.
It's the best. The best.
Blistering.
Yeah, I mean, it's just. This whole performance is incredible. He just crushes it for like an hour and change. And this is a Woody Guthrie song. Like, don't forget.
I forgot about that.
Like, where this cover is coming from. It's so far from where it started.
Mexican arrangement. I love how the bassist is like 55 years old.
That's it.
Glasses and a tweed jacket. Good stuff.
Love that. I'm going to take you to a very different location now. His tone is always incredible. I am obsessed with his guitar tone in this song. This is one of his biggest hits. It's called Little Sister. And it's from this record he did that is like fairly synthetic sounding. I don't know if you'll agree.
Well, the cover screams 80s to me in a good way. I'm digging this this palette here. He looks sharp.
He does. He's looking sharp. It's Bop Till You Drop.
79, sorry.
79, he's
Bop
right there.
Bop Till You Drop. The song's called Little Sister.
It sounds like it's, the whole record is tight and sort of synthetic sounding, but it's still sort of earthy. And I don't know how he achieves this tone. Like it's just, it sounds like a synthetic tone and yet there's like grit to it. I don't know how he did it, but this is one of his smoother tracks. This is a sort of hit for him. And most people, I think, know this song if they know of Rykooter. I've just figured I should play this one.
I'm seeing in the YouTube comments, this album was the first digitally recorded, commercially available pop album.
I heard that. I wasn't sure if it was accurate, but yeah, I've heard that.
So we're just going to hear a little Atari bloops in the background. Is that what that means?
Right. People playing Pac-Man and whatnot. Yeah.
79. Wow. That's early for that.
It's early, and it sounds like a mid-80s album. Like he's ahead of his time even when he's doing this style.
Ooh, a little Mark Knopfler in there.
Oh, yeah.
That new wave flavor.
Mm-hmm. This was like probably his most commercial thing that he did.
Here's the deal. My wife plays a lot of Pokemon Go.
Okay.
And there's the Pokemon Poliwhirl, and his like idle animation is he's kind of swinging his arms back and forth, like just kind of standing in place, like doing a little bit of rocking back and forth. And
yeah.
It's exactly to this tempo. So she always calls stuff like this Poliwhirl music.
Okay.
Just do a little ding. I love
oh,
this.
Yeah. That's exactly how I would dance to this music.
Yeah.
That's how I would dance to most music, though.
Clench your fists, hold them in front of you, just kind of shake your shoulders back and forth.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right. There's two more I want to play you, because we're just going to do that today. Have you ever seen the film Paris, Texas, the Wim Wenders film?
I'm aware of it. Funny enough, I see stills from that movie on my Facebook feed all the time, which, great, I'll take that over political shit. I know it's a cult favorite. My mom is a huge fan of that movie. Maybe it was on
really?
when I was like 9 and I didn't know what the fuck to do, you know, so I didn't pay attention to it. I'm sure if I went back and checked it out, I loved it. I would love it.
Rather. You would. I think you would. It's one of those movies that just gets stuck in your noggin. I mean, when I saw it the first time, I was like, oh, all right. And then I was just thinking about it for like a week or so after. It's a lot about love and connecting with people and the difficulties of staying connected with people and what pulls people apart and brings them back together. And it's just this massive film. And his soundtrack for it is just gorgeous. I was trying to decide whether I should bring that in or I think I'm going to go in this direction. This is a song called Maria Elena. It's another traditional song that he took on, and it's a similar style to what he did for the Paris, Texas soundtrack. I mean, you'll hear it. It's a tune that does bring tears to my eyes. It's just perfect. It's guitar music. It is Mexican influenced, and yeah, I think you'll like it. But this is very traditional. This is him being like, I love this style. I'm going to do it to the best of my abilities.
All right. This lasagna is not sitting well. I have to run to the bathroom.
Take a dump now? Holy shit. Okay.
Rumble in the jungle here. Hold on.
Oh, my God.
And we're back.
Hey.
We're listening to Maria Elena.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
All right.
This tune started at like 47 seconds. And this is just, you know, it's a traditional sounding tune. And but it's just stunningly beautiful. The playing is incredible. And yeah, it just takes me to that desert, you know, and it reminds me too of Paris, Texas, the approach that he took for that soundtrack, if anyone's ever heard that.
Oh, and that guy's got a new movie out, Perfect Days. I've heard that's really good. Wim Wenders.
Should check it out.
All right, so this is from the Rye-Cooter anthology, The UFO Has Landed, 1972. Or maybe this was originally on Boomer's Story, looks like.
Yes, yeah.
Let's check it out. Sounds like it would be really fun and really difficult to play.
Yeah.
It's relaxing.
Mm.
I dig that piano.
Like a sunbeam, you know, this song's like.
Almost has a Paolo Conte flavor.
Oh, God.
I dare say so.
I don't think he was an early influence on him, yeah.
Honestly, probably.
Damn. Fucking love that music. Let's end on one, a real what the fuck.
We're not going to do Buena Vista Social Club. You're just going to leave me hanging there.
That's its own episode. And that's not even really him. You know, like he.
All right. Yeah. He's just a part of a.
Advised on it. I think he brought it to the world. But it's those those Cuban musicians are the ones that fucking popped off on that one. He's on there, though. He plays on the live thing. I know he plays on like throughout the record, but he's ushering it along more than being the centerpiece of it. This song is a crazy tune. So this is sounds very personal to me. First time I heard this, I was riding down the Cumberland River in the Nashville area on a yacht. Not a place I typically find myself on a number of levels, with some friends who had access to this yacht, because definitely was not from anybody that I know. And just, you know, looking at all these mansions and speeding down the river, and this song comes on, and the boat is blasting music, like you just feel in your chest. This song came on, and it's just, this is years ago, I just never heard anything like it. You know, it's fucking nuts. It's a crazy song. And this is a newer song. This is off of a pretty recent record. It's called I, Flathead. And it's a concept album about a fictional race car driver. It's just, hearing it for the first time was a glorious experience. So I'm sure it's, you know, it influences me as I continue to love this song. But it's just, you got to hear it. It just sounds nuts. And he's still making music like this that's like, you know, we talk about Bowie or Leonard Cohen or, you know, Joni Mitchell or people who are, or Paul Simon, people who are getting up there who continue to kind of push the envelope and make great stuff. I think he's in that category.
I, Flathead, 2008. The song is called Drive Like I Never Been Hurt.
It's great.
Yeah, I'm expecting some bananas stuff here.
It's crazy. It's crazy. We got to listen through the first chorus because you hear it. It's again, it just keeps taking it in other directions. And it's just, yeah.
Here we go. This is very Hosono-esque here.
you told everybody that I couldn't drive. Right. And you didn't even want me around. And you knocked my love, and you know that's a lie. 'Cause I'm a good man when the flag goes down. I'm gonna drive like I've never been hurt. Down the road like you never lied. I'll find my way like I've never been lost. You never laughed and I never cried. I'll say goodbye. All my friends.
It sounds like a song that would pop up on I Think You Should Leave. Like one of those batshit musical sequences they have. Someday.
Never gonna miss me when I'm gone. I'm gonna drive like I've never been hurt. I'll be long gone like you never lied. I'll find my way like I've never been lost.
Yeah, that like percussion loop, that's some next level stuff there. Oh, hell yeah, mariachi.
This horn section, my God.
Well, I'm in the road.
Yeah, I definitely see why you like this.
It's just fucking weird, but it's so heavy.
Got heart to it still.
Yes, yeah.
They'll know my name. My head's blowing loose all over again. Views getting hot. Sun's getting high.
He's still chunky all these years later.
I'm still chunky after all these years.
My brain's too good.
Yeah.
Just fucking great. I mean, you know, he's got so many other classic collaborations, soundtracks. I stuck with songs from his solo records. I aspire to be this eclectic in my approach to the Muse. Like just doing whatever is called for a given song, for a given record, and doing it fearlessly, something we could all look up to. And so many artists say, well, I'm not writing for an audience. I'm not writing for my audience even. But then you hear them writing for their fucking audience. And I hear Reichhuter making music for himself and for the musicians he's playing with. And God damn it, like it sounds like how music should be played. It always sounds like how music should be played.
Love it. You knocked it out of the park this week.
I'm happy I have done one that I love. I'll mix it every so often. Next week I'll go back. I'll talk about
New Metal Part 3. You can keep these coming. I'm not telling you otherwise.
No, I feel pressure to go negative though. You know, or not even just go negative, go novelty.
Go goofy, yeah.
But we kept it right down the middle this week. No, so
this is great. I think we could do more of these. The often overlooked, underappreciated legacy singer-songwriters out there, yeah. Mm. Keep them coming.
Well, what have you been listening to this week?
Losing my opinion.
Last episode I listened to, I heard you correct me in my transition. I said, what have you been listening to? And you went this week.
Yeah, gotta keep good form. I'm covering the sort of novel, just garbage, trash that.
Great.
Negative, blah blah blah. Just our usual dreck. We're going great. Right back there after this brief Oasis.
Okay, we need the mixture, right?
Do we? I don't know. But no, I think this will be fun this week. We're both big movie buffs. We're both children of, well, no, I think you were born in the 80s. I was going to say we're children of the 90s.
No, see, I was, you know, raised through the 90s, so.
Yeah, you're a 90s child. Kid.
Yeah, in the 90s.
You're a good old 90s kid. I was thinking, I feel like a big thing you saw in the mid, especially late 80s, 90s, and then kind of fell away is, you know, you have a movie and you have a rap scene in the movie.
Okay. Yeah.
Feel like, you know, in the early days of rap, when people were like, what's that? I never heard of it. They're just talking rhythmically. I went to the grocery store and got, when it was like that, you know, part of rap and when it was just catching on in the mainstream. Seemed like a lot of movies like to incorporate rap scenes.
They did.
Enough to comprise a segment today, dare I say.
Oh, God.
Yes. We're looking at... rap scenes in movies that are not about rap. So we're not talking about Eminem, 8 Mile. We're not talking about fucking Hustle and Flow. That's a whole different thing. We're talking about a movie's just going along being a movie, but we're going to have a rap scene.
And all of a sudden there's a... Yeah. Yeah. And are these songs that are done by the characters in the movie?
Yes. These are all performed by people who are credited in the movie, whether they're the main character or a new special side character.
Okay.
Depends. But this rapping is happening in the context of the film, in other words.
And are you arguing that these are good songs, or are you just sort of presenting this?
Well, this could be a good old fashioned ranking. So we're
okay, sure.
We're musing on this trend that happens. And actually, I do have a theory. As when we get to the end of this, I do have an argument or a potential theory of how and when this died out as a trend, because you certainly do not see it now. If you were to have like a sudden rap scene in a movie now, I feel like it would happen to be like a reference to the era I'm talking about. Like, you don't just do that in anymore, like in a comedy or anything, right? Am I missing anything here? Like,
no, I don't think so.
There was a little while there where it's like, oh, another way we can spice this up, you know, get this product to market, put some rapping in there. So I'm just looking at that terrible, terrible trend. Some better and worse examples of it. And you want to rank these and see if you agree with my theory at the end.
Yeah, this is Hollywood trying to like catch on to a zeitgeist. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And am I a big fan of rap? Am I a big aficionado? Not really.
Yeah, you don't talk about it often on the show, I've noticed.
My knowledge is limited. Maybe I know all the lyrics to Clint Eastwood, you know, the Gorilla song. Maybe I do.
Yeah, that's a pretty indie way in, though, I think.
Sure. If they have 2 degrees of separation from Gorillaz,
wow.
I'm probably down. You know, I am an MF Doom fan. I am familiar with Mad Villainy.
Okay, that, I mean, that's great. He's brilliant.
I'm a big MF Doom guy. He's kind of like my one little meager example I can offer up, though. Like, yeah, maybe I checked out Blackstar back in the day.
Oh, I love Blackstar.
Most Def, Black on Both Sides, sure. But yeah, I'm kind of like... I'm like a early 2000s Brooklyn Pitchfork kind of rap person, you know.
I'm picturing something now. Yeah, that's a really good.
All my references are going to be 20 years old at this point. But anyway, all to say, I don't always like run away from it. I have listened to and enjoyed.
But you're not an expert here.
Enough
that's
to
what
have
you're
a
trying
sense.
To
no,
demonstrate.
Far from it. Yeah. No, I barely care about lyrics in conventional pop music. When it's all going to be lyrics, you think I'm listening to that? Anyway, before I dig a deeper hole for myself here, let's get started. As I said, I'm going in chronological order from release of the film. I wanted to start with probably one of the first examples, definitely in a studio film. I think this is pretty much as early as it's going to get. The movie itself is about the phenomenon of breakdancing. So I say it's pretty apropos that you have some rapping in there. There's a scene where Ice-T, very young Ice-T, is the MC at a breakdance party.
So he was acting early on.
Yeah, this is his first big break here.
Law and Order? Is that
way pre Law and Order. This is 1984. So the song is called Reckless from the movie Breakin'. I've not seen this movie.
I've heard of this movie. Yeah, it's really famous.
The dancing looks pretty good in it, but no, I didn't grow up in that era. I don't have any ties to breakdancing, so.
You don't? Okay, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, surprise, surprise.
I would have, yeah.
I wonder if I could even do a somersault today without getting super nauseous.
Oh, I'd love to see that. Not after that lasagna.
Careful what you say there. So, here we go. This is Reckless. I don't think this is... In the context of the movie, because it is about breakdancing and like it all makes sense. I don't think it's tacky, but the way this sounds kind of makes me nauseous. So maybe it's not a good idea. I'm about to play it here, but like it just doesn't sound good. And I don't think that's Ice-T's fault, but
like sonically?
Yeah. I mean, see what you think here coming
up. Okay. So we're not about to listen to like Jay Dilla. This is like.
No. Oh, I love Jay Dilla.
Yeah.
He didn't rap though.
He didn't. No.
All right. Here we go. And you don't quit like that. Hip-hop is quick, that. Right, like, why does the drum machine sound this way? My man Ozone's here, you better know he's always gonna steal the show. You gotta pay the cost to beat the boss, baby. So Ice-T's doing something in between MCing and rapping, I suppose.
Yeah.
Now 1, 2, 3, 4. Get up, everybody. Get on the floor. Cut turbo. We're rocking the night. We're gonna rock the heart. Gonna rock it right. We're gonna move y'all in. Gonna move you out. Teach what the boogie is all about. He don't jam disco. He don't jam blues. He got the funk right into his shoes. So rock, 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 rock. Rock to the rhythm and don't dare stop. Come on. Rock, 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 rock. Rock to the rhythm. Show what you got.
Serious dancing, but yeah,
doesn't translate to the podcast format.
No, though. The dancing part doesn't. It doesn't translate.
There's more rapping coming in a bit here.
Oh wow, what is this? To the beat, rocking you boys to share the beat. The girl looks pretty, she looks nice. Rocking the house to the beat of the ice. You know this girl clean, best one that you've seen. Take it to the COP, bust you out officially. Never off, always on, rocking to the break of dawn. Like this, like that, a fly girl that's not the wet. Like that, like this, you know she won't quit.
It's going a little fast for me at this point.
It's a little fast. Yes, you know this girl is. Yeah, okay. Yeah, it sounded like it was a little fast for him. He sounds like he's definitely early in his in his career there.
I think this was the era of rapping where people only understood the concept of rapping if you were directly explaining what was happening in front of you.
It was less. I think it was. It's like listening to like early rock and roll tunes. Yeah, early ambient music, even where it sounds like it's being the road is being built as the song is happening.
They're figuring it out.
Yeah.
As they go along.
I mean, I can't say I love that tune. It does sound like it comes from that era. Like that early style of rapping.
So for today's selection, I think it's both the most perfectly respectable instance of doing this in a movie because it totally makes sense. And also it sounds so bad.
Yeah, that didn't sonically, that didn't
the
sound
the style,
great.
The drum machine is awful. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder what Ice-T feels about that now.
It got him paid and it kicked off his career.
Sure. So I mean, he's doing
I'm
great.
Sure he keeps it all in perspective. Yeah. So you can keep that one in your mind as we go through here. Remember, I might ask for your ranking
sure.
at the
yeah,
end.
Sure, yeah. I hope that one is not at the top of the list.
We got some real silly business for this next one here. Moving on to 1987. So, you know, rap's coming along here. We've had some Run DMC, some Beastie Boys by this point, I believe. The 1987 movie Dragnet.
What? Like with Dan Aykroyd?
With Dan Aykroyd and Tom Hanks.
What the hell?
So this appears in the end credits of the film, but what I'm going to pull up is the separate, like, official music video they did together.
Mm-hmm.
You never seen this?
No. It sounds nuts.
So this is, like, this was a promotional tool. Like, they ran this music video as part of, like, hey, there's a new Dragnet movie out.
Yeah, because when I think Dragnet revival, I think hip-hop and Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah. Oh, when I think Tom Hanks. I think, yeah. I think flowing bars, yeah. So this is called City of Crime.
Oh, boy.
And the lyrics tie into the plot of the film.
I already feel like I'm not going to like this.
Morning in the City of Angels. On this particular occasion, we happen to witness a pagan ritual.
MCA Records.
See that, Streamet? We're just in time. We have stumbled into a major crime.
They got the girl off right. Now that's not nice. I think she is the subject of a sacrifice.
We're putting this party on ice.
What the?
But first, you know, we really ought to read them their rights.
Read them their rights.
Read them their rights.
Well, I'm here tonight to rap about
that's Tom Hanks
rights.
Rapping.
Because right now, you're in trouble.
This is crazy.
You don't have to say nothing at all. Y'all got two calls, and you better make them on the table.
Got some dance choreography now.
This is the city of crime.
This is totally a ripoff of...
What, the Super Bowl Shuffle? What is this a ripoff of?
That guitar riff sounds like AC/DC.
Oh, okay. This is nuts.
You're a dangerous mob, and it is our job to bust you all for being violent. While we are here, let's state it clear.
You have the right to remain silent. Well, excuse me, comma, Mr. Crime Stopper, what is wrong with what you're doing? We just like to dance in our gold.
Really awkward when you have to map out plot points.
Yeah, there's a lot of exposition in this
two meter.
It's my duty to inform you in my pleasure to warn you.
We'll provide one for you.
Glad they got the Miranda rights in there. Just hoping that would happen. Tell you what, Tom Hanks, not a bad dancer.
Aykroyd already comes off like he's 60.
Yeah, he's looking. Okay, right. Yeah, I think we...
Well, who has better flow, Hanks or Aykroyd?
Well, Tom Hanks has given it his all, so I guess Tom Hanks. I mean, Dan Aykroyd's really just speaking, so it's kind of not fair. Look, I mean, one of the best rap albums of all time, Paid in Full by Eric B. and Rakim, came out in 1987, I believe. And then this was happening at the same time. This is not good. This is really not good. I prefer the last one because it's from this movie that was really influential in this scene, not just in the breakdancing scene, but in just hip hop as a movement. And it still feels authentic to the movement, even though it's like, okay, it's early goings and the style.
Super dated.
Yeah, it sounds dated. Yeah. The production of it sounds dated. It's still, you know, there are elements of it where you hear where it's going. This is just like, they're trying to like sell tickets to this movie. And it's crazy. I mean, they do sound like they're really trying to make it work. They're both very talented people, but like, they're adopting that sort of like Run DMC Aerosmith mashup style. And it's just, this is crazy. I can't believe I've never heard this existed. It's like a Joe Pesci rap song. I hope you didn't bring that one in today.
No. That wasn't part of a movie, okay, thank God. Well, it's only going to get more embarrassing from here, I hate to tell you.
That one is, I like that one less than the first one that we heard.
All right. Well, moving right along to my next pick. This wasn't just a song in the end credits. This is a full dedicated scene in this film. This is probably the most famous scene from this cult classic movie. I've gotten some very hearty chuckles out of this movie over the years.
Is this animated?
This isn't animated. This is from 1989.
Okay.
The movie is Teen Witch.
Never heard of it.
You never seen Teen Witch?
Teen Witch?
Oh,
no.
Man. Next time I'm down in New Jersey, we're queuing up Teen Witch for movie night.
I don't think I've ever even heard of it. I've heard Teen Wolf.
It's like a bastard sequel of Teen Wolf.
Okay.
Maybe it was direct-to-TV. I don't know. I mean, it's like a real movie, but it's so, so, so dated at the same time. It's so embarrassing and it's glorious. And this truly, like this scene in particular, became a meme. The song is Top That.
Oh, boy.
And Hui Min is really tired of me singing
Listening
Top
to
That.
This?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure she had a blast this week.
Man, I get to be the one to show you Top That. So the movie is about a teenage girl who develops magic powers and then loses
her friends.
Yeah, I probably could. Yeah, it's all that stuff. But for some reason, in the middle of that is this scene where her and her best friend encounter this like cool, edgy gang of dudes, and they're playing a boombox really loud, and they're rapping the song you're about to hear, Top That.
Okay. I assume they're trying to one-up each other. Oh.
You seen this?
I've seen this as a meme.
Here we go.
This is, oh God.
I'm king, and they know it. When I snap my fingers, everybody says short. I'm hot, and you're not. But if you want to hang with me, I'll give it one shot, Top That.
And then they come across him.
No, I'm not in a
Two mood. Girls are on bicycles coming over to what's going on.
Oh my God.
You can dream until you're blue, but you will never top that.
Let's go back the other way.
Yeah, those dudes seem pretty dangerous.
Go up and talk
casually dancing
kidding?
To music outside of their car.
I'm so embarrassed. Look at how funky he is.
Oh, man.
Look at how funky he is.
These guys look like they are at least in their 40s.
I'm hot, and you're not. But if you want to hang with me, I'll give it one shot. Top that.
All right, she's going to use her magic powers to develop rap flow here in a second.
Supersonic, idiotic, disconnected, not respected. Who would ever really want to go and top that? Such a waste of pretty face, but hanging in your nose space. I wish that you would take a look and really stop that. Top that. Well, stop that. I don't really give up about trying to top that. I wish you finally take a real look and really stop that.
She's a lot better than the guys.
So that goes on a little while.
Yeah.
So how'd you like that?
That was fucking terrible. What? How am I supposed to react? That is barely listenable. It's just so uptight. It's like the most uptight version of rap you could possibly make.
So rigid.
That's the worst, I think, of the three we listened to, because at least I get to listen to Tom Hanks try to rap in the other song, and that's just amusing. And the first one is like of historical importance. This is certainly not either of those things. But it is, it's fun to watch and listen to. I cannot imagine the listener what they're experiencing right now with these extremely visual things.
Hey, it lets you focus on the musical quality more.
Exactly.
You're distracted by that. Yeah.
True.
This next one, I gotta believe you've heard of this next one. I want to think that you went to see this movie in the theater back in the day, but maybe you're not quite that old.
Talking about Ninja Turtles?
Yeah, I'm talking about Ninja Turtles 2.
Yeah.
Secret of the Ooze.
The thing was, my parents took me to Ninja Turtles. I was really into them, obviously.
The first and the second?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Went to the first one, middle of the movie, tell them my ear hurts, and before the end of the movie, we had to go to the doctor because I had a raging ear infection.
Oh, shit.
So, second time we go, the exact same thing happens. I get an ear infection midway through the film and have to leave. I got a lot of ear infections as a kid. So, I have seen parts of the movies in the theater, but never to the end.
So, did you see the scene near the end of the second one where Vanilla Ice appears and sings Go Ninja Go?
I've seen it years later. It is sort of iconic, him.
It's pretty doing iconic, that. Yeah. Yeah, 1991. So if we play this now, though, are you going to get an ear infection?
I hope not. I mean, maybe. I don't know. Maybe that was the thing that tipped it off.
Vanilla Ice, titan of the genre.
Yeah.
I go a little, well, I don't know. For a while, my stance on Vanilla Ice was, well, when he started out, he was only 16, you know?
Yeah, he was young. Yeah.
But then he didn't release Ice Ice Baby till like 7 years after he wrote it. So I'm like, no, you were sitting. You knew what you were doing. You were sitting on that.
You ever see the interview where he says that it's not under pressure?
I have not.
He's like, no, it's the little bitty ting. He's like, ding, 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 ding. He's like, that little bitty ting makes a difference. It's like, come on, man.
He must have been fucking around. Come on.
He was a little bit fucking around, but also not. Also a little bit not. Because this is, you know, this lawsuit, so waiting. He actually did a Limp Bizkit style version of Ice Ice Baby that you should listen to in your own personal time.
I should, huh?
It is.
I would save that for some future Drek episode. I'm not going to listen to that on my time.
Yeah, sure.
So here we go. This is Go Ninja Go, Ninja Go.
This is probably going to be number one, I would say.
Yeah, you love this.
I remember this one.
Go ninja, go ninja, go. Go ninja, go ninja, go. Go ninja, go ninja, go. Go, 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 go.
He is a good dancer.
Oh, he's fantastic.
So again, we got the second Ninja Turtles movie. Everybody fucking loves these turtles, but you know what? To send it over the top, we gotta put in rap.
Yo, it's the Green Machine, gonna rock the town without being seen. Have you ever seen a turtle get down? Slamming and jamming to the new swing sound. Yeah, everybody let's move. Vanilla is here with a new jack groove. Gonna rock and roll the place with the power of the Ninja Turtle bass. Iceman, you know I'm not playing. Devastate the show.
You know what, this is the best one by far that we've heard today.
It's the most polished, certainly. I mean, he's it's the only one so far where the rapper's rapping on beat. I mean, no. I see, he's great, but like he wasn't there on the track we heard.
He didn't have much to work with, shall we say.
Fill in the gap, drop that bass and get the ninja rap. Just feel it, if you know what I mean, give it up for the heroes in green, just flow in.
I mean, yeah, this is kind of just as good as most of the other stuff from this era, right?
No.
That was
good rap from this era. It's just,
I'm not talking De La Soul here. I'm talking just like
all right. Yeah, if we're talking
shit
about
that was topping the charts.
if we're talking about turtle themed movie rap, then yes, this is the top. We should do a De La Soul episode. That'd be fun. This is that's not good, but it's one of the better ones that we've heard today. And I don't want to make fun of Vanilla Ice. I feel like he's gotten piled on. He's like one of those sort of easy targets, like, oh, we can make fun
of him. Too easy. I mean, and it's back in the day, you know, he was top of the world making bank.
His poster was everywhere. Yeah, people love them. It's like it's easy in hindsight to be like, oh, that sounds dated.
He's had to grow up and find his other new avenue now. So, yeah, whatever. I'm not here to bash Ice. I'm bashing this trend. I'm bashing whoever it was that had the idea. Hey,
opportunistic rap songs to bolster the views of movies.
It'll be great for Turtles and it'll be great for Ice. Yeah, yeah. Whatever that kind of thinking was back in the day.
That's synergy right there. Like if you look up the word synergy in the dictionary, you find Ninja Turtles 2.
Iconic example, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so we come to my last choice. Definitely my favorite. I pretty much love this movie. I love the scene. I liked listening to this unironically this past week, and I think this was like the death knell of putting rap scenes in movies unless they were about that culture and you were doing something specific, like just haphazardly, like, you know, it had probably already been dead for a while, but this was it. 2003, the movie is Goldmember.
What the fuck? I don't even remember that there being a rap song in this
Dr. film. Evil does Hard Knock Life when him and Mini-Me are in prison.
I forgot about this. Yeah.
This is great stuff here.
I guess they did do that.
You seem unimpressed. I thought you'd love this. I thought you were an Austin Powers guy.
Is that what I seem like? When I talk to you, I seem like an Austin Powers man? I've seen those movies. I imagine that they are very dated now, right? I mean, they're full of the moment
references. They mostly hold up, I gotta say. I do. The third one gets a little weak here and there, but like they're fucking solid all-time comedies.
Okay. I mean, everybody loved them when they came out.
Yeah, they're still good.
Okay.
It's like SpongeBob. It can't really get old.
Sure.
All right. So I don't know what kind of response you'll have to this, but I guess Jay-Z sampled a song from Annie. It's a Hard Knock Life.
Yeah. Like, yes, of course. Yeah.
Jay-Z did that, and all they did was they took that backing track, and then it's just Dr. Evil rapping over that. But I like it. I like the way it sounds.
I mean, the original Jay-Z's that song is great.
We'll see what you think of this.
Okay.
No crib on MTV, God only knows, got my mini-me in the GP, see how it goes. Evil's all that I see, and you ask me my name? G to the Rizzo, E to the Vizzo, I to the Lizzo. I'm a crazy... We all knew that. Austin caught me in the first act, it's all backwards, what's with that? So I'll make a prophecy, from the dogs to the mini-me. Give me an Escalade, a two-way bling-bling on eBay. Domino. Yeah. Stick that in your pipe and smoke it. Uh-huh. It's for all my homies in Broome.
This is terrible.
Uh-huh. Cristal, my moto, a couple of beehotches. Why not?
Yeah, I think it's where do you go from here? This is...
I got a buster move, dropping buster groove, feeling fine. Got an evil crew, gold member to lick my nine. Till then, I'll jig on my butt, brains up, put...
I do remember that, this is where you censored everything, Yeah, that's...
So where do you go from there?
Pretty upsetting. I don't know where you go from there. That's one of the worst, I think. This is an easy ranking. I think they're all... That might be the last place,
Oh, you're nuts. Do you remember Top That?
Top That doesn't... It's not, like, offensive to sensibilities.
Hey, Pat! And they knew it.
I guess maybe Top That's worse. Yeah, I guess Top That's worse.
Do you remember City of Crime?
How did I forget that one? That's right in the middle. It's just because the novelty of it, I think, elevates it slightly because it's like Dan Aykroyd and Tom Hanks doing a Run DMC Aerosmith thing. Second, I would say is the Vanilla Ice tune because, you know, it is iconic and probably the most technically proficient. And then first, I mean, I have to give it to the Breaking Song because that movie is like, you know, historical. You know, I don't like that song, but like it's important in a way that none of these other songs are important.
Sure, sure. Yeah, you're all about context.
I'm a real context guy. Yeah, for all these, half these are movie songs. But
right.
I guess I did learn something today. I learned that Tom Hanks and Dan Aykroyd have a rap song, which was just not
music video.
In my brain. And a music video to it. I will probably watch that again and show it to someone else just because it's insane.
Well, I learned you got no love for Austin Powers.
I really don't.
You got no mojo.
No, I don't. I feel like those movies would be very dated.
Boo. And I also learned that I'm going to be listening to a lot of Ry Cooder coming up. That was great.
You can't go wrong. Just go through his discography. Yeah. Just go through. Don't listen to Buena Vista Social Club yet, though, because I'm going to play you that.
Well, yeah, I'll make my way there eventually, but okay. Looking forward to all that. This is coming out April 3rd. Anything you want to plug? Anything going on with Thin Lear?
Overnighter, the new Thin Lear single, just came out on MGM, Metropolitan Groove Merchants. You can listen to it on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube. There's a lyric video that a really amazing artist named Robin Sessions did. And I'm excited that you're listening to it.
I'll check out that lyric video. But if you out there, listener, if you enjoyed this episode today, recounting all those wonderful 80s and 90s movies, you can go ahead and subscribe so you never miss a future episode. New episodes every Wednesday. You can follow Losing My Opinion on Instagram, TikTok, or
X.
Excellent. I'm really disappointed in your Austin Powers take. Austin Powers,
that
great
was the,
trilogy,
the upshot of the segment.
Great all-time comedy trilogy. I could be wrong now. I don't think so.
All right. Yeah,
that was my best Dr. Evil you're going to get here.
All right. It's not bad. And I'll say, so long, suckers. Listen to Ry Cooder. See you next week. Collaborate and listen. Hope is back with a brand new adventure. Something rhymes to hold on me tightly.